Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire, everybody. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm excited today. We are bringing back one of my favorite athletes I've interviewed all year. And I think we've interviewed just about 90. And when we bring him back, we call the show The Cool Down because we're just going to sit back a little bit, catch up, see what they're working on, see what they've been up to, and really get to know these athletes on a different level. And that was the case today. I have Rebecca Rush back on. She wrote a book recently. We talk about that a little bit. We talk about some of her adventures through adventure racing and some of the things she did before she was the mountain biking phenom that she is now. It was a really fun 25-30 minute interview. I think you guys are gonna really like the experience that she brings and the passion that she brings every single time. If you want to learn more, go to athleteonfire.com and you can check out our podcast. You can link up to Stitcher, iTunes, and shoot over a review if you like what we're doing. If not, then just keep listening or share it with a friend. I think you guys are going to really love how humble Rebecca is and how many stories she has from her her wealth of knowledge in endurance sports. And I just love sitting down with her because she takes me all over the world, and it was a great experience. So I'm going to sit back. You guys enjoy today's episode, The Cool Down, episode number 12. Thanks a lot. Hey everybody, this is Scott Jones with Athlete on Fire, and I am lucky enough to sit down again with Rebecca Rush, who is an amazingly inspiring athlete. And I had a chance to sit down with her in the middle of the summer because a great company, Soul, actually introduced us, and I got her story, kind of a condensed life story. But today, she's doing a lot of, she's kind of getting out of her comfort zone. She's used to getting out there and adventuring all over the world, hop on a bike, paddling, and doing some crazy stuff that eventually leads to a lot of physical suffering. But she has written a book, so I think she's gone through some mental suffering in the last 6 months, 2 years, or at least I'll assume that somebody with that much energy to sit down and put a story down on a computer would be pretty tough. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Was I close with that mental suffering thing?
Yeah, very much so.
That's so funny. I talked to, do you know Karen Lundgren?
What's that? Say that again.
Karen Lundgren.
Of course I know Karen.
Yeah. So I actually, well, you remind me of her. Well, you guys have a very similar career path, obviously, but, I interviewed her yesterday and just talking about like the ability to sit down. So her off day, basically I was trying to get to what her off day was physically for training and stuff. And she's telling me, oh, you got to rest, you got to rest. I was like, oh, so what do you do on your off day? She's like, I go ride. I was like, what? So it's just kind of like you always kind of have that energy to just go do something all the time. And I'm assuming you're similar. But let me give people a way to kind of connect with you before we get into the nitty-gritty here. If you guys want to follow along or learn more about Rebecca while you're listening today, if you're not out on a ride or on your trainer in the middle of the winter here, you can go to RebeccaRush.com, and everything that you need is right there. Rush to Glory is the name of the book. That link is right up the top. And we're going to talk a little bit about the whys for the book, and then we'll dive into some good stories. So the name of the book is Rush to Glory, and you had an amazing co-author, Celine Yeager. I want to give her some credit because I'm sure she was a big part of the process. But why did you decide? I mean, anybody who has an interesting story is going to be told to write a book eventually. Why did you eventually just do it?
Mostly because a publisher, Velo Press, came to me directly. Celine was in on the project, and really it was kind of, it landed in my lap, and enough friends and, you know, professional people in the writing world told me that I needed to do it. So it was really a lot of prompting from other people, and it was definitely a team effort. But I mean, really, Velo Press came to me, it landed in my lap, and I've been thinking about it for a while, but I felt like the opportunity might not ever present itself like that again. So I had to go for it, even though I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel, you know, it's kind of like any sort of scary undertaking. I didn't feel qualified or ready or prepared, but I went for it. So it happened.
That's cool. And so so Athlete on Fire, the reason I started this whole thing is because I wanted to be able to talk to athletes like you who have gone out and done amazing things and then just relate to people that you're a normal person and that that there's an ability for most people to do some pretty cool things. So I'm just going to read your little forward, your little excerpt on like the first page of the book because I think it's pretty cool, okay? So it says, for everyone who's ever thought, that looks amazing, but I could never, these stories are for you. I believe you can, and I'm living proof of that, and I hope that you enjoy the trying as much as I have. So that kind of that was awesome, and I want to be able to share some of these stories through your book, with that theme in mind. Okay,
Okay.
so let's talk about really quick. Let's talk about some things that you've done, places you've been. Just take a second. If somebody who's listened has never heard of you before, what's the best way to just sum up what you do athletically and what you've done in the last 5 or 10 years?
I would call myself an endurance athlete. And I've dabbled in everything from, cross country running, rock climbing, adventure racing, which is multi-sport, multi-day, whitewater rafting with the US Women's Whitewater Raft Team. And then the most kind of recent iteration is, endurance mountain biking. So kind of jack of all trades, maybe master of none. But the general theme behind every sport has been, doing stuff that's exciting and following my passion, and travel and exploration has been a big part of every sport I've done.
So the tagline is adventure, risk, and triumph on the road less traveled. So let's talk about adventure a little bit. What is adventure to you? Because to some people that adventure might be walking down to the grocery store, but for you, I'm assuming it's something much bigger. What does it mean to just get out there and adventure for you?
I was born kind of an adventurer. I mean, as a kid, it meant camping out in the backyard. I grew up in suburban Chicago in Downers Grove, and I would beg my mom to let me sleep out in the backyard and put up the tent and like stay out there in the dark. And that was adventure for me. Or riding my bicycle like a few blocks further out of my neighborhood, and we would camp as kids too, and I love those camping trips. Once a year, we'd go somewhere and load up the car, and that was really, I think that's where kind of the adventure was born for me. And even in my running days in high school and college, it's like I loved cross country more than track, just because you didn't know what the course was going to be, and they were all a little bit different. And so, I mean, adventure is, it's anything that you make it. It's anything for me where I don't necessarily know the outcome. The biggest adventure was absolutely most recently this book, buying a house and doing a remodel. Those are adventurous
Holy
things too,
crap.
but yeah, but I also love to travel around the world and see other cultures and adventure in that way, but then also internally adventuring kind of like, well, what can I do? Can I win the Leadville 100? Can I become a bike racer when I really, really suck at mountain biking. And so I think it's basically just pushing beyond what the known, what the everyday, normal, what is known to me.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to ask you a question about your limits, about limits in general here coming up. But okay, so here's a question. Do you remember the first, I think everybody remembers, but when was the first time you left the States or left North America? Canada, Mexico, don't count. Do you remember where you went?
Yeah, actually, I went to Australia with my high school running team. I sort of was selected for this elite group of, high school students that got to go run this race. I think it was like a half marathon or something like that, in Sydney, Australia, called Beta Breakers. And, it was like this gigantic, 10,000 purse race or something. And as high school students, our coach took us over there, and that was a big adventure for me, to go to Australia to do a running race. And then the second sort of thing that spawned from that was becoming an exchange student in Australia in college.
Nice. So
Yeah.
when you're there in college, would you go out on your own and just kind of find places to run and find interesting things to do, or did you just kind of hang out in town?
Well, no, I joined the outdoor adventure team, or club. They had this club that where they would like take you rappelling and take you whitewater rafting. So I joined that club as a way to meet people, and that was really cool. So yeah, I mean, I ventured out, but I had sort of some tour guides who were Aussies and, went rappelling for the first time and stuff like that. It was super fun.
Oh, that's cool. I think so many people, I grew up in South Florida and there's adventure there, but it's not, I live in Colorado now. Like I can go get lost and challenge myself in a lot of different way here. But I think so many people, like no matter where they come up, they see what you're doing or what a lot of the outdoorsy people are doing, and they think there's just such a barrier to entry. And there's really not, because I think anywhere you go, there's some kind of group that is there to teach you how to do this stuff.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I mean, I really got into outdoor sports in downtown Chicago. Living in Chicago, I was working at a health club there, and they had an indoor rock climbing wall. And this was in the 90s when, like, indoor rock climbing walls weren't in every school. It was really unusual. And there was a 100-foot climbing wall there. And that really was my, like, introduction into outdoor sports, was inside on a plastic wall with a bunch of people doing aerobics, you know, nearby and on stair machines. And to me, that it was super inspiring to do a sport, like, for the sheer, like, excitement of doing it, instead of doing a sport for, oh, I need to, like, burn this many calories, or I need to stay this many minutes on the treadmill. The sort of difference between the athletes who are on the climbing wall versus the athletes who are on the treadmills, and no offense to treadmills, but it was just not passion. It was sport for because out of requirement versus sport for passion and love and enjoyment. And so my outdoor sports were really born indoors in Chicago.
That's crazy. I've worked in the health and fitness world forever. And I tell people this all the time. If your goal is health, if you're training yourself for health, there's not going to be a lot of passion there. I mean, the only way you know it's not working is if you get sick or diseased or injured. So it's really hard to wake up in the morning and go to a gym and say, okay, I'm going to get on a treadmill for 40 minutes because I don't want to be sick when I get older. That is the most boring reason in the world. So really trying to push people, and I think your intro in the book really explains, like, everybody can get out there and find something that's big for them that they can reach for. And the quality of life and your fitness and all that stuff kind of follows if you can figure that thing out, you know?
Yeah, the health and fitness and mental health too is all a byproduct of it. And it just makes it more fun to find something that is inspiring for you, because then you're going to want to do it instead of it be a, you know, a job of getting on a treadmill. So I mean, and we're going to get calls from treadmill manufacturers who are going to get really mad about this.
Oh, it's okay. They're awful. I actually freaking hiked on a treadmill last night. I get together with some guys. I have keys to a gym around here. And every Tuesday night we get together at like 9:15 after I put my little dudes down. We just get after it. And I felt like sweating. So I hiked that incline up and tried to kill my buddies. But yep. While I was on, I was like, yeah, I could be on an actual mountain doing this, but whatever.
Yeah, you do what you have to do. I mean, I ride the indoor trainer too, because, you know, sometimes it's not accessible. And so you do what you have to do, but hopefully that's not all the time that you're exercising is, you know, indoors and without a lot of passion.
Yeah. And for, you know, for recreational athletes, I think the pitch, I say this in Colorado all the time, is you want to be fit enough that when you go do the challenging things, like if you're going to go hike a 14er, you want to be able to be fit enough to have your head up and be able to take everything in, so you're not just suffering and struggling the whole time. There's got to be a certain level of fitness. And day-to-day life, like you said, you can't always get on the mountain every day. You've got to take care of yourself in different ways. But
my coach Dean has a really good quote on that. He's like, I like to stay ready so I don't have to get ready, which is exactly what you're saying.
Oh, that's awesome. So who's your coach, fitness coach, personal coach? What kind of coach?
Yeah, my coach for training, my fitness coach from CTS, Dean Gollidge.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so you're a beast. This has been established. Your nickname is Queen of Pain. Holy crap, okay, that's ridiculous. So tell me about a time when you actually got in a rut physically, where you just were not, like, you weren't excited to work out, you weren't excited to get out and do something. Or has there ever been a time like that in your life?
Absolutely. It happens a lot. And it's happened multiple times. It really happened with this book, you know, because I really had to commit to getting the book done. We were on a tight deadline for the Leadville 100 launch to have the book there. You know, in the meantime, Dean is sending me workouts, like, just do what you can, you know, get out when you can. And I wasn't doing my homework. I wasn't doing, because the book was a priority, and I've paid for it, you know, in races. And like you said, you know, it's not as much fun if you're suffering more, you're out of shape. And I've definitely paid for a year of basically not being at the fitness level I would like to be at. And it's amazing how long it takes to get into shape and how fast you get out of shape. And it's hard to go, you know, it was hard for me after this book thing is to go to races, not be at the fitness level I want to be, have people passing me that normally aren't passing me. It was very humbling, and, you know, it would have been easy to throw in the towel and say, oh, I'm done being a professional athlete. I'm, you know, I can't chase my goals anymore, but I'm digging out of the hole and it's taking a while. But the big key, the two things that I need to dig out of a fitness rut are a coach is great for me, you know, having a program or a plan or somebody to hold me accountable. And then also I have to enlist the help of friends to be like, hey, will you go on a 2-hour ski with me? Or will you come do, I'll have my husband, Greg, let's sit on the trainer. I have to do some intervals. Will you do them with me? And it just helps a lot to enlist the help of friends. And then the third thing I'd say is I have to sign up for events so that that holds me accountable as well. So I have a couple snow bike races coming up, even though it's winter season. And I'll do those for fun, but they also keep me honest.
Nice, nice. Which ones are you riding?
You know, I'll be doing J. Peterberry's Fat Pursuit, which is a 200-kilometer race in Idaho that about killed me last year. It was during the book writing process, and I didn't finish the race. I got really sick, coughing up blood, and had to actually drop out, which was a bummer because I was having a lot of fun because it was basically 24 hours on my bicycle, not writing the book, not in front of a computer, and so I was just having so much fun. But my lungs betrayed me on that one. So I'll be going back this year for that. And then also Fat Bike National Championships, the first USA Cycling Nationals are going to be in Utah, close to Idaho. So I'll be racing those.
Nice, nice. Me and, well, I'll tell the story later, but me and my buddy put on a fat bike race here in Colorado last year. It was at almost 11,000 feet. Of course, you know, if you guys are listening, fat biking, look it up. It's blowing up as a medium for winter towns. It's really cool. It's fun riding and all that stuff. But we put one on. It was at almost 11,000 feet here in Colorado, and we were freaking we were grooming the trail for like 2 days before, trying to hard pack and everything. And literally, the day of the race, it was 62 degrees in the middle of January. So we had some really good riders out there, like, you know, former Olympians out there, and it just turned into a slush fest. There's nothing we could do, and we just kind of had our head. We're like, what can we do, man? It's 62. It's supposed to be 20 out here every January. So it was just crazy. But if you guys have a chance, go do one of those races. Those are a blast. All right, Rebecca. So we're gonna change gears here a little bit. So I love the adventure piece. You've gone to some really cool places around the world. So let's talk about some adventures that you've gone on. I know you've been to Borneo and to some really interesting jungly areas. So just I'm not going to pinpoint you. Take a couple places that you've been and adventures that you've been on and tell a couple interesting stories, whether it's a happenstance or some kind of humanity story, something cool.
You know, Borneo was a really cool event, the Eco Challenge that we did there. One of my favorite things about international travel and especially adventure racing is you would get well off the beaten path and really interact with the locals and the people who live in those areas. And Borneo was a pretty cool one. We basically had, we had a sick teammate for a while, so we'd been on a paddling section, and Tony was pretty sick. And so, you know, we were well behind schedule, which meant we had run out of food. So we, you know, pull up on the banks of the shore, this little tiny village. And there's hundreds of people standing out there, you know, wearing sarongs and no shoes and, you know, very sort of primitive living conditions. There was no road going to their house. And here we come, you know, we're in Lycra and shiny backpacks and, you know, we've obviously got a sick teammate who's kind of laying in the bottom of the boat. So as we come ashore, you know, all of these big, strong men start grabbing our boats, helping pull us ashore. And they could see we were hungry. They could see that Tony was sick. And, you know, the women all kind of go and help Tony out of the boat. And they immediately start, the whole town starts ushering us into their little thatch huts, lay us down, start serving us food. And basically, we didn't speak their language. We couldn't really say anything to them. But, you know, it was the universal language of we're hungry, we're tired, we don't know where we are. And they just welcomed us with open arms and were pouring fresh water into our water bottles. And it was so cool. We ended up spending having a whole meal there where everyone kind of sat down and we sat on the floor, you know, around this big, long sort of blanket on the ground, passing around cassava root, which is kind of like potato. It was like their main source of food. And, you know, it tasted so good to us because it wasn't, you know, space food or dehydrated meals or anything like that. And they were so friendly and open. And then we slept for a couple hours, you know, they put blankets out for us. And, through gestures, we basically told them, look, we need to get up in 2 hours. And so they, you know, the one of the women like gently woke us all up in a couple hours. It was really great. And then, you know, one of the big strong men in the tribe basically escorted us out with a torch. You know, we've got our headlamps. He's got a torch with fire on it and no shoes and just a little loincloth. And he basically escorted us for about 2 hours in the middle of the night, you know, to get us on track. We kind of showed him on our map where we wanted to go. And he was just like, yeah, I got it. And it was so cool. And watching him just like spring across the rocks and up through this riverbed with no shoes on. And we're bumbling around with like hiking poles. And I mean, the one thing that really struck me is how athletic and how out of our element we were and how in his element he was, but also how welcoming that community was. They didn't know who we were. They didn't understand Eco Challenge. They just knew we were hungry and needed help. And they were like right there to give it. It was a really cool experience. And that's happened all around the world.
Oh, so cool. Well, and the thing is like, you always remember the beauty of the countries that you go to and especially when they're different than where you're from, but there's always some kind of humanity everywhere we've traveled abroad. There's always been somebody take us in for a meal or show us the way or give us a ride for free or, you know, pay for something that, you know, they couldn't afford. It's amazing when you travel like that. And, I'm sure it builds your character because you want to treat people that way when they come into your backyard, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. That's one of the great things about me now having a home and not living out of my car is I can actually welcome, you know, friends and return the favor. And I've started doing that already with some adventure racing buddies. So
well,
it's pretty cool to be able to give back that way.
Unfortunately, you're in a really cool, you're in Ketchum. I'm letting people know you're in a really cool place. I'm not going to give her address, Ketchum, Idaho, yeah. Everybody. But it's beautiful is what I'm trying to say. It's not like she's in, no offense to all my buddies back east. It's not like she's in Akron or Cleveland or something. So Borneo. Okay. I kind of want to know the end of the story. How'd you guys do in the Eco Challenge?
We did okay. We ended up, you know, kind of limping along and, you know, we had, as you know, in those adventure races, people get sick all the time. And, so we kind of a little give and take, and then Borneo, actually, no, we didn't finish that one because later Patrick ended up getting really bad foot infection. So we made it through all but the last final stage and then he couldn't walk basically and had to abandon. So that was one of the ones we didn't finish.
Okay, here's the question. And all, I'm kind of intrigued by wildlife because there's always some really cool stories you hear. So in all of your travels and all of your competitive or non-competitive travels and adventuring, do you have any cool wildlife stories?
Let's see. We've seen elephants, bats, lots of snakes and bugs, which is not a good thing. not happy about that. Camels in Morocco, actually, that was pretty cool. Riding camels was the first Eco Challenge I did. That was the first stage. Was everybody was on a camel, and it was total chaos on the beach in Morocco with like 400 camels, which was like all the camels in that part of the country. And they had all of the, you know, a camel is a really valuable asset there. And so all of the handlers were also there making sure that, you know, their camel was okay. So there's all these men in white flowing robes, all these camels, all these athletes like on top of these beasts who were like going crazy. The camel doesn't like, it's not used to being ridden like in a straight line. And so, you know, they're going in circles, some are running, some would lay down, some were walking. Oh, it was total chaos. And what? People were like wearing their life jackets over their legs as like padding because there really wasn't a saddle.
I was going to ask what comfort wise versus riding horseback, what's the difference?
Their saddles are basically two wooden sticks along the camel's back with a couple blankets thrown over them. So the wooden sticks actually like dig right into your inner thigh. And then you're given a piece of rope, you know, that's tied around the camel's nose. That's super rough, you know? So everyone's wearing gloves, trying to sit on their life jacket and then trying to just stay on the camel. And they're super tall. Like you're way off the ground when the thing stands up.
Holy crap.
So that was probably the weirdest, animal interaction that we've had to do in adventure racing.
That's great. Okay, so Morocco is a very interesting culture. Did you do you have any interesting stories just about the culture there, especially as a female athlete going over there?
Yeah, I mean, it was different because we did a three woman, one man team. It was the first time that sort of the gender had been reversed. Traditionally, I mean, you have to be co-ed, but traditionally most teams do three guys, one girl. And we went to that culture with three women, one man. And I will say there was definitely times, where I was glad we had at least one guy because the culture is very different. They don't often see women out traveling alone or traveling like that. And so it was different for sure. It definitely felt good that we were traveling together. But people are also super friendly, giving us tea and out in the middle of the peaks in Morocco and, playing music and banging drums as we come through the villages. They'd all kind of all the kids would come out and start cheering and yelling. So it's, I mean, even though they do have a different culture, and it was probably different for them to see a bunch of women, traveling together. I mean, the kids and the people out in the rural areas are still just, welcoming you, and they think the spectacle coming through their town is really funny and really cool.
That's really cool. Cool. So, one of the questions I wanted to ask early on, you're somebody who really takes pride in testing her limits. Do you think that you've found your limit yet? Is there anything that would indicate that?
No, I think limits change and they grow. And I mean, it would have been a limit, 10 years ago for me to somebody say, oh, you're going to ride the Leadville Trail 100. And without, coaching or preparation or any like bike skill, that would have been a limit for me. But I really do think that, kind of with preparation and planning that people really can kind of tackle whatever they feel like they want to do. I mean, it's not, I couldn't say, oh, I'm going to go be an astronaut, but I could go to school and learn and get there if that was something I really wanted to do. And so I feel like kind of adventure sports are the same thing. It's like, what inspires you and makes your hands sweat? Have you thought about sailing around the world? Or have you thought about running a marathon? Or have you thought about climbing a 14er, climbing a peak? And if those are the kind of things that come into your head and make your hands sweat, then that's telling you, okay, but let's back up and what's the process to get there? Okay, I'm going to buy a pair of running shoes if I want to run a marathon, and I'm going to kind of work my way up to that. And that's how I've kind of tackled all of my big adventures. I've never just like jumped in cold feet. A couple times I have, but in general, it's pretty prepared. And so no, I have some really big goals that are coming up that I'm super excited about. So no, I don't think I'm not done yet. And hopefully I never will be.
No, that's cool. Oh, can you tell us any of the goals?
I can't quite tell you one just yet, but I will say a lot of my attention and what's making my hands sweat and getting me excited is sort of a combination of everything I've done with the adventure racing and the sort of self-support and the bike racing, and combining those two things is really interesting to me to see where I can go on my bicycle. And the Coca-Pelly Trail ride that I did about 2 years now ago, that was kind of the start of it. It was like self-support, 100 and something miles, and I just rode it alone and went to break the record. Carrying a water filter, carrying my own maps, and those things are really interesting to me. So I'm starting to kind of want to combine all of my skills into one package and do some exploring on the bike.
Very cool. I interviewed a guy, Joff Summerfield. Have you heard of this guy? I wouldn't call him really, really well known, but he is not. He rides penny farthings, ridiculous distances. He did one over in Southeast Asia, but he recently, this last summer, he rode from, don't quote me because I can't remember the exact places, but I think from Toronto across Canada, and then down the Canadian Rockies and the our Rockies down to Mexico on a penny farthing. This is the for you guys listening. Those are the big dog, old school, giant tires in the front, little skinny tire in the back. It's just wild. But anytime you hear of somebody doing something like that, it's like there's still a lot of things that people can do. It's really cool. All right, let's see here. So I think a lot of your story is just about adventure and really pushing your own limit. I think probably a lot of stuff that you're about to do is more about competing with yourself than with other people. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Kind of setting personal goals. I mean, it's great. There's nothing like crossing a finish line first and putting your arms in the air. It's like a super addictive, awesome feeling. I love winning. I'm not gonna lie. But I also, I get just as much personal, out of a personal goal, just as much satisfaction, even if there is no finish line. If it's something that I've set, I'm gonna do this from this to this. It's a different kind of a win. There aren't a bunch of people there screaming for you, but it's more of an internal achievement than
Yeah,
an
for sure.
external one.
Awesome. So you guys, if you guys are listening, the name of the book is Rush to Glory. I have a couple more questions for Rebecca Rush. You can learn more about her at rebeccarush.com, and the link to the book is actually up top there. My next kind of question is kind of a comment here. I was able to go to Leadville. It's only about an hour and a half from where I live, and that's where you kind of that was your kind of kickoff party for your book, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And they put you on the spot, man, or you put yourself on the spot because you had to go in front of a pretty big crowd up there in the little old theater up there, and you read an excerpt, and it was a powerful excerpt, man. You told a story about writing Leadville after losing a friend, and I know it was tough to write, I'm sure, and I'm sure it's even just as hard to read, but I just wanted to personally say kudos. I mean, anything that you have done physically probably wouldn't even get close to sharing a story like that. So thank you for sharing that and writing things like that so people can relate to what you've gone through. That's crazy. Number two, I just want to ask you, like, if somebody does pick up the book, whether it's a young woman who wants to push herself, or even a guy in his late 30s, early 40s that wants to get back to his old self of adventuring and competing, what are one or two things you want people to take from this biography?
It's funny you say biography because I never wanted it to be that. I never wanted it to be about me. Exactly like you said, I wanted people to take something from it. I wanted it to be about the reader. Like, yes, they're my stories, but I want them to take something away. And I mean, really, what I hope people can take away is that, finding a little bit of adventure and passion in your life on a daily basis, no matter where you live. I mean, it's everywhere. You can find it. Even if it's at an indoor rock climbing gym in downtown Chicago, I hope people will come away from that book and not just look at me going, wow, that stuff she's done is really cool, but going, wow, I could actually do that too, because she's a normal person. She's had asthma adversities. It's not all handed on a silver platter, but that anyone can kind of find adventure and push their limits. And if they do that, the rewards that are going to come from that are really going to make you more a complete person and a happier person. So I hope
Absolutely.
people take that away and like have plan a little adventure for themselves, for their families, for their kids.
Cool. Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on again. Thanks so much for opening your heart and writing a book that's really close. It's got to be hard. And really for taking time out of what I would assume is a somewhat hyperactive personality and sitting down and writing this thing. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for reading it. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it was awesome. And for everybody else, you guys go check it out. It's rebeccarush.com. You can find Rush to Glory on there. Give Celine Yeager, her co-author, a little more props. She did a really good job. And lastly, I'm Scott Jones with Athlete on Fire, and you guys were inspired by Rebecca Rush, who is absolutely an athlete on fire. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for listening to Athlete on Fire. Stay fired up with additional resources and information at athleteonfire.com.